All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Kings and Priests. I'm here with Pratush Bodiga. What's up, man? Did I say that right?
Yeah, you did. How's it going? Okay,
good, man. Thank you for being on today.
Yeah, excited to be here.
And so you're in San Francisco, and what company do you work for? What's like your, what you're up to now.
Sure. Yeah. I'm an investor at SUSE Ventures. So SUSE is a early stage venture fund. We also have a small growth, well, not small, but we have a growth practice as well. So we just, looking to invest in great companies that are building the future.
That's awesome. So dude, I came across you on Twitter. I think it was late last year because you wrote a piece on your Substack called Cards, Crypto, and Christ. Where you tell your story of, and this is your words, how you torched your net worth by 90% two times. It's the story of how I chased after money, status, and glory, and the story of how I finally found freedom and redemption in Jesus. And man, I like came across this, I read it and was like so floored to have read it and just immediately started stalking you on Twitter. But you start the piece off with, you kind of come out of the gate swinging. You say, I was like, this first line was so good. You said, I used to think Christians were stupid, which is awesome because, you know, what we're trying to do with what we're building here is help people think better about their faith. So I guess my first question is like, why do you think, because it wasn't just you that thought Christians were stupid. I think a lot of people think that. So why do you think that is?
I think it's, a lot of it is probably media portrayal, just sort of like, you know, the generic impression of Christians is kind of what you see on TV or what you, you know, see in popular media. And I think that sort of like lends itself to like not necessarily a good impression sometimes. I think also probably, and this is something I've been thinking about, is that I think the last maybe 40, 50 years is like to us, because we've just grown up in it and lived in it, it feels like very normal, but probably like most of the very wealthy financial, like very wealthy businessmen, entrepreneurs, or academics, like people that, you know, everyone respects as like intellectual, have not been Christian. So everyone sort of like has this default impression that, you know, you don't see Elon Musk being a Christian, you don't see Jeff Bezos being a Christian. So you're just like, oh, well, Christians don't do this, Christians don't do that. But then if you like actually step outside, let's say the last 50 years, like if you go back and start studying history a little bit, even in America, it's like, well, yeah, Christians were the leading entrepreneurs and businessmen and leaders and intellectual thinkers of their day. It's just, you know, Harvard was founded as like a, you know, a place to teach ministry and, you know, or not, maybe not to teach ministry, but teach like young Christian men how to be, you know, great leaders. John D. Rockefeller was a Christian who like served in his church every Sunday, you know, like all these things is like very, very common. But I think over the last 40, 50 years, it, that the people, Christians who have kind of not been in the marketplace as much. And I think that, or either intellectually and financially. And I think that has been kind of an issue in terms of maybe the popular perception of Christians. So.
Yeah. There's, I think it's J.P. Moreland, I think, is who wrote the book. It's called Love God With All Your Mind. And it's really does highlight, especially in the last 50, 60 years, how we have, Christians have removed themselves from the intellectual cultural conversation. And so it has given way to these caricatures of what people see as Christians now. And I think that really does like turn a lot of people off. I want to get to that in a second because, man, your story of finding Christ is so cool, but I got to ask you about poker first.
Sure.
If that's okay. So the reason I got to ask you about poker is because I paid my way. Well, I played poker as I was paying my way through Bible college. So I graduated high school in 2004, watched Rounders just like every other poker, you know, kid, and started playing in a home game. I grew up in Dallas, Texas. And at the time there was just tons of poker rooms. And, when I was 18, I went and was playing 1-2 no limit hold'em at this like, you know, underground poker room in some strip mall somewhere, and ended up getting quad queens and beating quad jacks, which won me the bad beat jackpot for the night.
Nice.
So my $100 buy-in playing 1-2 no limit hold'em turned into, like $15,000 cash, which I then, pretty much proceeded to lose all of, the summer after. So I don't know, you know, I've played a lot of poker, very like minimal stakes, but what like got you into, what got you into poker? I don't know, maybe just tell us like a brief story about that. Cause you like, you've played professional poker professionally for many, many years, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I've always just been like extremely obsessed with competition and being competitive. So when I was a kid, I was doing spelling bees and geography bees. And, you know, I think I did well in those. And kind of when I got to college or afterwards, I was kind of looking for something new that I could kind of like, that would deal, like allow me to like express those competitive juices, you know, like when I, after I won the spelling bee and after I won the geography, it was like, or geography competition, it was sort of like, okay, what's next? And just due to getting good grades and going to college wasn't really enough there. And so poker was always like, is a game that was like really fun to play. And I mean, I definitely was playing it more casually in the beginning, but just as I got better and better, I started, you know, taking it a lot more seriously. And that's where it just kind of went from there. I don't think there was like any specific moment where I was like, oh, this is like, this is it for me. It was just sort of like a gradual, like my junior year of college where I just really started playing a lot. It was sort of like that competitive fire was being finally like stoked again after like 5-6 years where, you know, just getting into college and stuff like that wasn't as interesting.
Yeah. So did you start playing live games or did you start playing online?
I started playing online. So I was just playing like, you know, $5 tournaments online. Those like $2 sit and goes and stuff like that on Poker Stars. This was like right before poker got banned actually in the United States.
Okay.
So it was, yeah, it was like 2010, 2011.
Okay. Do you play anymore or have you hung up the hat? Yeah.
Mostly hung it up. I mean, this is, maybe it's like a psychological thing, but I think it's almost like if I just stayed playing casually, I think I would have still, I probably would play more than I do now. Like it'd be more fun. But I think in a way, having reached or played with like the best players in the world at one point, it's like, it's almost like hard to play and know that you're not good anymore or that you're like kind of like, you're pretty rusty. Not that like, I mean, I think playing versus like amateurs or whatnot, I'd be fine. But I think, you know, when you've reached like the highest levels of the game and then knowing you're not as sharp and making mistakes and like stuff like that would be like very frustrating. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I play for fun with friends occasionally, but I think like going out to like a World Poker Tour event or something like and getting owned by some like kid who's been studying PO Solver for the last like 5 years would be like extremely tilting just because I'd be like, oh man, I used to be able to like compete with these guys and now I don't anymore. So I think that's tough. it's like being an athlete or something, you know, like if it's like if you were once like playing for competing for the NBA finals and MVPs and then like some kids just like crossing you up and like leaving you on the floor, it like sucks. So I don't know. You kind of like find new interests to like go out.
Yeah. Did you ever like, I mean, so you played a lot of tournaments. Were you primarily a tournament player or did you do,
Yeah, I mostly play tournaments. Again, it's just kind of like, I like the fact that there's a winner at the end, you know? And I mean, I think I'm trying to be better about that where it's not just about, you know, winning and the the goal, like the whatever the list is at the end. Like I think in Venture, there's this thing called the Midas list. And I'm like, okay, the old Pratt would have just been like obsessed with like one day I have to be number one on the Midas list. That's like the only goal. Whereas now, I mean, partially through coming through faith and all that, it's like, okay, it's not really about what the external world says about you, but it's like, did I build good relations with the founders I work with? Did I help, you know, invest in great companies that change the world? That kind of thing that like, and you know, obviously deliver great returns and stuff like that, but it's not this like mono or tunnel vision view of like the only thing that matters is getting to number one on the Midas list. Like, yeah, I think that's kind of a change that happened through coming to faith. But the old Pratt was just like obsessed with that kind of stuff. Like getting like, probably if you asked me 4 years ago what the biggest disappointment in my life, it's that I only ever got to number two on Global Poker Index versus number one. And it's like, I probably stuck around in poker for like another like year that probably after I'd already fallen out of love with the game, just because I was like, maybe I still should I should get to number one before I retire.
Do you remember do you remember who was number one when you were number two?
I think Bryn. Okay. And he's actually number one on the money list now. He wasn't at that point, but I think he was ranked number one when I was number two, but I don't remember exactly.
Okay. So I want to get to like, and I'm going to link to your piece in the show notes. Cause I do think like, it's just, it's so good and vulnerable and honest and, man, all that stuff. But maybe just give us like a brief, quick journey from, okay, you are winning millions of dollars playing professional poker. You're getting involved in crypto. Like, just give us a quick like TLDR of there to just like the moment, I guess, before you sort of had this encounter with Christ.
Yeah, sure. I mean, so like I said, I'd sort of fallen out of, started to fall out of love with poker in like 2016 or late 2016, early 2017, but was still playing pretty high stakes and still like obsessed with it competitively. But I don't think I was like, I just started to have more interests outside of poker. Whereas like in 2013, like I literally didn't think about anything besides poker, like any second of the day. And so I retired in middle of 2017 from poker. That it wasn't like retired. I knew I was going to do something else. It's just like, I knew poker was done. And at first I honestly wasn't planning on getting into crypto or anything like that, even though a lot of my friends had already started to transition into crypto from poker. I actually was just like reading a lot of books and watching YouTube videos and actually Jordan Peterson videos, which was ended up being relevant to becoming a Christian a couple of years later. But I was just like in kind of like exploratory intellectual mode. And then I don't know, towards the end of the year, Bitcoin, that was the first time Bitcoin went up to 20K. It was like a crazy year. You remember it with the ICOs and everything like that. And a lot of my friends were making a ton of money in these ICOs just because like, I mean, it was just like a speculative mania, like even just as crazy as what we saw last year, if not crazier. So even though I wasn't into crypto at the time, it was just like all my friends were getting rich and I was like, well, I should do this too. And so the next, I basically probably started investing around basically the worst time you could. I mean, some of them, it worked out, seemed like it was going well in the beginning, and probably January 2018 or February 2018 was probably the richest like I'd ever been, even more from than I'd made from poker. But obviously it was all just paper money and these ICOs that were like all fake, and you know, they all crashed like 98% or whatever before we even got the tokens. And you know, like it was all paper money on weird Chinese exchanges that like no one could actually trade on. But so like the course of 2018, it was mostly like, oh, I lost like a lot of money because of like what I'd invested, trying to learn trading, trying to like do other things to try to like figure it out. And you know, I have like a bookshelf next to me that has like, I don't know, like 50 trading books or investing books. And I like read all of them and was trying to figure out trading. Towards the end of the year, you know, realized I wanted to get like a mentor for trading, hopefully. Actually connected with 3 Hours Capital, which has, you know, been in the news lately. And, you know, they were still an FX fund at the time, starting to look at into crypto. They brought me out to Singapore and they were like, hey, why don't you build this crypto game? We have an idea for an Ethereum, you know, like you can build an on-chain game. That's like an interesting use case of crypto, which obviously a lot of people now, 2-3 years later, like totally get, but at the time was probably a little bit less common of an opinion. And so started building that in 2019, but like, I mean, crypto is still going up and down and, you know, continued to, you know, my net worth has continued to dwindle and that's basically what brought me a new, and eventually to, you know, I guess the whole church thing, which I guess you is where you wanted me to leave off. But yeah, that's what brought me out to Singapore. So.
Okay. So you're in Singapore and here's what I found really fascinating about, and I reread it earlier today. So you obviously are a really, really smart guy. Obviously as a poker player, an investor, right. That's a, And yeah, you do talk about in earlier at sort of the beginning of the piece about coming across like Jordan Peterson's, what was that? That bit was like an Old Testament, biblical series.
Yeah,
he was
had this
doing
Bible series where he went into like Cain and Abel. And honestly, like in retrospect, I feel like a lot of it was like probably not even accurate or like wrong or whatever, but it was at least like, you know, I mean, it's like, it was like a very psychological interpretation of the Bible using Jungian stuff, which is like interesting, but like some of the stuff, like I remember there was like this idea about like how, like the reason we developed eyesight was because of like us being able to see apples or something. It's like, that's why we have the Adam and Eve story or something. I was like, now I'm like, wait, that probably is like not accurate at all. But I remember at the time being like, whoa, this is so interesting.
Well, so, okay. So what I find super fascinating about your story is you're incredibly smart and bright. you kind of start the piece off by talking about how you thought Christians were stupid, right? They're just like anti-intellectual. Yeah. And then you start to tell the story of meeting Jesus, and you reference music and worship.
Yeah.
You reference Good Grace, you know, the Hillsong United song and Good, Good Father later on, and Build My Life. Yeah. And so I thought, like, it's just like, to me, this interesting, like, for such a smart guy to have a first encounter with what you would later find out is the Holy Spirit in this kind of like emotional, spiritual way. So, like, talk about that moment, because that was the same way that I met Christ. I was 15.
Yeah.
And if you were to ask me, like, what was that like? There was no intellectual, there was no, at that point, there was no intellectual connection. It was purely like, wow, there is something so much bigger than me that is like beckoning me, right? In this moment. So,
I mean, I don't want to be prescriptive, but in my opinion, it sort of feels like that's the only way it really happens, like where you have that deep conviction and where you believe in Jesus, where it's not just like a thing that is a good social technology or like, oh, I would love for my family to have a church and a great community. But it's like, no, Jesus is real and he's a part of my life. Like I've noticed like over the last few years, starting with Peterson, Gerard, popularity in Silicon Valley, et cetera, there's like a lot of people who are interested in Christianity once again from an intellectual perspective. You know, I think David Perel has written some great articles about it. You know, people have like, they're very interested in intellectually, but like that appreciation doesn't translate to faith necessarily. You know, like I probably met like at least 10, 15 people, if not more, who are like, I want to believe in Christianity because like intellectually it makes a lot of sense, or I think it'd be great for my family if we had a church and whatnot, but like they don't believe actually. Or if, you know, even if, you know, so it's like very, it's very hard for them to believe. So I think it's only through an encounter that you can really, you know, meet him and it changes your life, and like in a moment you're actually convicted and it changes. So like it's very hard for us people who like are obsessed with intellectualness sometimes to like because you can't really share that or like say like, hey, here's like this book you can read and then you'll be convinced. And it's just like it's all about the experience in the end of the day.
And so you kind of like have this encounter with God, and then you leave. Like, what was life like after that? Like, were you like aware of what was happening?
Literally the night of, right?
Yeah. Or just like, even like just the few weeks following, right? So like you have this encounter, I'm sure you're trying to intellectualize it, but ultimately it was like this experience. So what was like, if that was the moment where you experienced God, what was like the next couple of months, like sorting through this experience that you had?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was really like a lot of just trying to go deeper in my faith and try to understand like what it meant to be a Christian. Like it's not like immediately obvious, like right afterwards, like what you're supposed to do or like what's changed. I mean, you know, some things are different, and also intellectually knowing that Jesus is real is like quite a bit different than like knowing that he loves you or, you know, how your life is going to change afterwards. Like, I think I talked about in the piece that there was a month later or so was where I first really had the realization that, you know, Christ actually loved me while watching this, you know, sermon and video. And that was like extremely overwhelming. And it was quite a bit different than just like, oh, Jesus is real. It's like, okay, God is, not only is he real, but he loves me, you know?
So what has the process been like now? So you have this encounter, your life is completely changed.
Yeah.
I don't know, like just what was the following couple of years like as you're discovering this? Like, what practical changes did that mean for your life and the way that you approached work and, you know, kind of like?
I think the practical one on the work side is like, I mean, I used to just be like obsessed with making money and making like myself like the highest status person I could be. Like we were talking about earlier with the Midas list and everything like that. Like that's what the old Pratt who's like, okay, venture seems like an interesting game to play. I want to be a venture investor. Like this is how I would have approached it would have been completely different. And sometimes that might not come across in terms of like, you know, if you're just talking to a founder on a pitch call, like there's probably no difference in terms of like the questions I would ask or something like that. But I think my perspective is quite a bit different. And a lot of times I'm just sort of like trying to understand the person a little bit more than just like the investment. I think, you know, I do think the Holy Spirit gives you a different lens into like understanding people and having like higher conviction in these certain areas. So I think it's affected my life in terms of like how I view my work, and I don't see it so much as just like, how do I accumulate the most money? But it's like, how do I make the most impact with something that I really enjoy doing, but is also and like plays into the gifts and talents that I have.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you see that? So like, I mean, obviously your work is this, it's this mix of gifting and talent and passion and interest and all that kind of stuff. How do you see your faith, if you do at all, play like a really practical role in the way that you approach your job and the way that you approach? I think a lot of people that are listening, like they go to church, they're Christians, they probably serve at church, they're a part of it. And then they sort of spend their Monday to Friday or Monday to Saturday completely immersed in a completely different,
I mean,
world or culture. What's that?
I think that's like, that's a temptation for probably all of us, right? It's like, okay, there's church life and there's like work life. I think, it definitely helps. Like definitely our pastor here in San Francisco, he talks a lot about, you know, sacred vocation and like, you know, your, what you do is like a big part of, you know, you're connecting that with your faith is important. I think for me, just very practically. So when I wake up in the morning, I'll, you know, read the Bible. I mean, that's probably also something a lot of people do, but I mean, trying to pray before meetings is, I think, something that's like good to do. I probably don't do it as much as I should, but it's definitely something I try to do at least before important meetings. And sort of like, you know, ask for guidance and wisdom and, you know, letting the Holy Spirit take, you know, like give me guidance while I'm talking, and praying before making big decisions, like investment decisions or, you know, voting decisions internally, things like that, I think is something that I do just like on a very practical level, is like, so that it's not just like even, oh, the 5-10 minutes I did in the morning that where I read the Bible, it's like, okay, throughout the day, can I like, you know, continually, go there and ask Jesus for help.
So how about you know, you mentioned wealth and money, and you sort of talk about sort of your old self versus now. How do you see as a Christian, how do you look at money now, right? Like, so a lot of what we talk about on this show is being an entrepreneur, being a founder, being somebody who feels called to build something and create something. Oftentimes, sometimes that does result in, you know, making money. Money's not bad or good. It's just a tool, right? So like, what are your thoughts on that? How do you, with the past that you have and the things that you've experienced and now working in venture, which is, you know, it's also, it's a game of trying to make, to make money, right? How do you see that? Like as a Christian, how do you see money? What do you think the connection is to you, the money you make and building the kingdom of God? Or do you see any connection at all?
Well, I think what's great is you can give away a lot of that money, you know, like when you make it, you can give it to charitable work the church is doing. You can give it directly to the church. Like I believe in tithing, all these sorts of things that are like really like important in building the kingdom of God. And I think, you know, I think everyone sort of just has their, not their role to play, but there's like different things than gifts people have. And, you know, missionary work and a lot of the great work that churches and Christian organizations do would not be possible if there weren't Christians out in the marketplace making money, right? So I think like that those donations can be really fuel like a lot of great work. And so I sort of see, well, this is something I, not only am I feel somewhat gifted in it, it's also something I just naturally really enjoy. And like, I think God has, you know, given me the gifts for that. So it's like, well, how, you know, may any money I make, like, how can I like, you know, basically give away as much as I can towards the kingdom of God. So I think the relationship is less like holding it with tight hands where it's like all about like putting a number on the board or buying like really nice houses and things like that. And, you know, I mean, I'm a very young venture investor, so there's a long way to go. But, you know, it's real. It's more just like the what you're optimizing for is not the same thing. And I think I really think that it's just there's everyone has different aspect, different parts to play. And like a lot of the great Christian work really could not be done without somebody making money. So,
How do you think your ambition has changed? Right. Like, so you now kind of have this new way of viewing the world. But your personality, your proclivities haven't changed. I'm sure that your competitive nature hasn't changed, right? And those things aren't bad. They are what they are. How would you say your ambition has changed? Our ambition doesn't just go away when we when we meet Christ, and ambition isn't necessarily a bad thing. Yeah. But how is that, like, how has that changed? And then how do you keep that in check? In your own life.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's changed, like, in the sense that, like, okay, so my goal in life is not to be number one on the Midas list, but, like, obviously I'm still, like, very competitive and, like, want the fun I'm working on to be the best fun in the world. I want, you know, probably I'll, like, you know, one day be thinking about these other things in terms of, like, competitiveness and just, like, making the best investment possible. I think the biggest thing is, like, my identity is no longer in those things. So it used to be, like, my identity was, like, in my status as a poker player, or how much money I was making, or, like, whether I won the spelling bee or, you know, whatnot. Whereas now it's like those are still goals and things I want to accomplish, and it drives me in terms of my day-to-day work. But it's not like my identity is not in that. Like, the identity is more in, you know, my relationship with God. So I think that is what changes it. So it's like you can still have the same goals, but it's like, is it what you believe is, like, the most important thing about you? And is it the thing that, you know, at the end of the day, you feel like that's, you know, who you are, where it's not who I am. It's just, like, something I'm doing.
Yeah. I love that, man. So switching gears a bit, like, a lot of what we talk about on this podcast is obviously how can we take, our faith and our worldview and who we believe God's made us to be into the marketplace, wherever we find ourselves, right? Whether that's a venture, whether that's a startup, whether that's a plumber or a small business or, like, whatever that is, right? It's like taking these principles. One thing that we talk a lot about is how do people or how can people who are in the marketplace, like, what does their relationship look like with their local church? So you and I have been talking for a half hour, and you've mentioned your church and your pastor a couple times, and you mentioned tithing. So in a world, like, in a society where there's a lot of talk about, like, loving Christ but not loving the church, or hey, I'm a part of church online, you know, like, all this stuff, like, what role would you say the local church plays in your faith? And then, like, what is, at a basic level, what does your relationship with your local church look like? You're a busy guy. Sure. You have a lot going on in your life. Is that a priority? Talk to me about what that looks like.
Oh, I think it's, like, so important. I think there's, and it almost goes back to, like, not just, like, the intellectual side about, you know, just reading books about God and whatnot. I think it's real, or the Bible even, I think, and which is obviously super, super important. It's, I think you need to be in community with other people, and it, like, helps build your faith. And it also is, like, a way to give back. I mean, for me, going to church on Sunday is, like, one of my favorite things. So it was really nice that when churches finally opened back up in San Francisco, which wasn't until, like, June 2021, which is wild to think about. Yeah, so my relationship with my church here is that I got introduced by another friend who's actually a VC as well. Started going there in person in June, and they were just, like, really, really, really nice and, you know, welcoming for somebody who's, like, fairly new. Like, with my wife and I got married a month later, and we needed an officiant, and we needed someone to do worship at our wedding, and they just kind of, like, stepped up and did it, like, even though it was, like, very last minute.
Cool.
And yeah, I have gotten to know the pastor pretty well over the past year, and just, like, you know, a great person who's, like, really dedicated himself to the city of San Francisco and, like, raising his family here and just really being a part of the community. And I think that community and trying to build a place where, even in a city where there's not a lot of Christians, that there's still people who, like, feel like there's other Christians out there with them who are doing life and, you know, trying to make things work and going through all the ups and downs. And, you know, nowadays I serve with the Epic student, which are like middle school and high school kids, like, every other Sunday. I think it's, like, that's, like, a great way. And it really, like, honestly, like, I'm serving them, but, like, they're, like, serving me in the sense that, like, I feel so much better every Sunday after I serve with them. It's, like, always great to hear sort of their stories and just, like, communicate with them. And yeah, it's,
that's,
like,
amazing.
Yeah, I love it. I think the church is really important. And I think getting plugged in beyond just, you know, you can be very much inside your books, but it's good to, like, have a community and have people around you and do life together.
So. Yeah. Yeah. That's so amazing, man. And that's amazing to hear. I think, you know, being a local church pastor, right? Like there's just, especially now post COVID, you know, like people's relationship with church changed a lot.
For sure.
And so to be back, I know that even just having people that are bought in and just there to serve is like such an amazing feeling for a pastor, especially in a city like San Francisco or LA, right? Where there's just a lot of people doing a lot of stuff. So you mentioned being a Christian in a city like San Francisco where there's not a lot of Christians.
Yeah.
And a lot of what we've been talking about too lately is just that, like all of a sudden it feels like more and more, and I don't want to, I'm not trying to get onto any hot button issues. Like that's not the direction I want to go. However, I think it's pretty obvious that some of our biblical worldview and our Christian beliefs maybe sometimes don't go along necessarily with some of the cultural narrative. And that's a tension for all of us, right? How do you navigate that? Like being in a city that isn't predominantly Christian and maybe working in a industry that's not predominantly Christian. Like how do you navigate being a Christian in that space?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I guess I'm still trying to figure out. I don't really have a good answer for you because, you know, when I first joined a tech company, I didn't publicly share that I was a Christian or didn't personally share it with anyone. It was just sort of like something I kept privately. But obviously, after I wrote the article last year, like a lot of people.
I was going to say, then you decided to mess it all up and write the Substack, right?
I mean, honestly, it's so far like it's most people are just. Have been pretty cool about it. And, you know, it's been, I don't think it's like, it's not something that I think should necessarily like, you know, you're not trying to go up and talk to everyone about it, you know, in the workplace. But it's just a part of who I am. So I think it's like there on my public profile and whatnot. But I think like, it's honestly, I guess I'm still trying to figure out and navigate it. But so far, it's been pretty okay. It's not something that really tends to come up.
Yeah. Well, that was going to be kind of my last question. Well, my second to last question before we close, what kind of made you write that? I mean, that's a gutsy thing to do, man. And honestly, a lot of respect for you for that, because it was a really vulnerable thing to share. And what prompted that?
Yeah. I don't know if it was anything in particular, but I think it was sort of like, I realized that to build authentic relationships with founders, as well as maybe the other people I was working with in my industry, that it's like important to just like lay out the real story of who I am. Cause like, in a way it sort of felt like you could write this whole other story of who Pratyush was, whereas, you know, he's this poker player and then he got some crypto and now he's doing venture investing, and probably the relationship you build with founders or with just anyone is not going to be real, because like the most important thing about my life is like not being shared. Right. And
man, you know, that's awesome.
There's probably times where people will be like, oh, like, why are you, you know, why are you just starting out in VC? Like you've made millions of dollars in poker. Like, shouldn't you just like start your own fund? Or, you know, like, I mean, not that that's like an important consideration, but things like that, in terms of like, no one really knew the whole story of like everything that's pieced together. Cause like, if you just Google me or look on my Wikipedia, like it might not just make any sense. And it's sort of like, there's so many questions. It was like, all right, like I just need to like lay out the full story of like, this is who I am. And this is like my whole story up to that point. So it felt like way easier to like actually be able to build real relationships with people. And I think that's sort of been borne out with ever since the piece, where I think the way I'm able to, you know, talk to people, like we're immediately on just like a real level, because like I've shared like all the most vulnerable, intimate things about me. So like most people feel comfortable knowing that I'm not just like another person who's just trying to like make money off of them or something.
Yeah, man, that's a really interesting way to put it, right? In a sense of like, man, unless people know the most important thing about me, like who was it that said, I forget who it was, and I can't believe it's escaping me now, but you know, the most important thing about us is what we think about when we think about God. And so to
the sermon I listened to on Sunday at our church literally had that.
Really?
That quote.
I literally just heard someone quote this today and I'm already forgetting who said it.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
That's such an interesting perspective of really like, man, if people don't know this about me, they don't really know me. At least in my most vulnerable way. That's such a cool way to think about it. And you've kind of continued, like even on your Twitter account, you're like posting Proverbs and there's like you and a few guys who are just like kind of semi-regularly like you and, Brent, oh gosh, what's his
Brent Beeshore? Brent is really important. So
he, like, Brent was supposed to be. We were supposed to interview him for the podcast this morning, but he emailed and said he was sick. So I think we're gonna try again next week. But yeah. I love him also. Yeah, you guys are. You know, you guys are pretty forward with what you believe, which I think is so awesome.
Well, I mean, Brent's forwardness was important in my own Christian journey, in the sense that I used to follow him just because he was an investor. And, you know, I remember reading all those investing books and listening to podcasts and stuff like that. And so I followed Brent for other reasons. And then, you know, he always has his like Easter and Christmas threads where he talks about Jesus and whatnot. And I remember after I started going to church with Glenn, like, I wanted to read more books about Christianity. So I like went through one of his old threads and was like looking in the replies, and, you know, people gave books that were important in me, sort of, you know, it was like the encounter was still the encounter that changed everything. But there was other books I needed to read that sort of laid the foundation. And I think Brent was part of it. So in a way, I sort of think about that now too, is like, you know, just by being forward about who I am, that, you know, there might be another person out there like that who, even if they didn't resonate with the piece right away, 3 or 4 years from now they think back to it and they're like, oh yeah, I read that piece from Pratt, let me like reread it or go further, and, you know, maybe they meet Jesus that way.
Man, that's so awesome. I feel like I have so many more questions, but before we close, why don't we do this? Let's get just like practical. So you are at San Francisco, you work in venture. A lot of people that listen are founders. Maybe they're wanting to turn their side hustle into, you know, what they do full time. Maybe just give someone listening some quick practical advice, being fully aware of like the current economic environment we're in. Like, what are your thoughts on where we're at now? How do founders need to be thinking about, you know, maybe the next year, 18 months? I'm not necessarily looking for like, you know, your hot take, but like, what are you seeing? Like, if you were to talk to a young founder now and say, hey, this is the way you need to be thinking about what you're building, what would you,
what would you say? I would say it definitely, markets have a lot of people are just uncertain. So I think that's probably the biggest thing. That's like, I think volatility and uncertainty is like the best policeman of risk. So now that people are just uncertain and there's been a lot of volatility, people just don't know what to do. And that's like freezing people even more than anything else, right? Like even whether you're a seed stage investor or a series B investor. And I think the later stage investors, the like market is like not fully corrected, but it's like slowed down a ton, where like it's really hard to get deals done there. I think at the earlier stages where I'm at, it's definitely more of just the uncertainty is like, so if people are kind of like looking for reasons to say no, so like anything that's like people are kind of like, you know, really diving deeper in almost every single question versus I think a year ago, everyone was just sort of looking for reasons to say yes and deploy capital. So I think if you're a founder, you have to realize that like there's going to be a lot of nitpicking right now. So I think the more you can sort of think about your business very systematically and think about what are the white hot risks, or what are the key risks of my business, and try to like systematically de-risk them layer by layer, is probably like the best thing you could do, because investors are just like very gun shy right now. So I think the best thing you can do is, you know, lower your burn, extend your runway, figure out how to build as much traction as possible. And, you know, just like understand that a lot of people are just going to be hesitant. So you need to be able to tell a story that sells your big vision, but also have the numbers to back it up. And I mean, a lot of that is easier said than done. It's just this, the reality of the economic climate. But like, you know, there's still like, you know, opportunity out there. And personally, I think this is like a great time to invest. So like, I'm excited, but it's just the reality is that people are just not going to be just throwing around money as much as easily as they were before. So I think keeping your story tight, I actually wrote a couple articles about storytelling if anyone wants to read my Substack, but you know, keeping your story tight and being like even though you're a founder, like maybe put your investor hat on and say, what are the major risks to my business? Okay, it's XYZ. Is there any way I can like de-risk or show signs of de-risking parts of this, so that like I'm like, it makes it more clear to investors that I have like a big vision for the business, and these risks can be like, you know, de-risked over time. So
Man, that's really good. So where can people find you online? Twitter, Substack, give us that info. And
yeah, Twitter is just Pratush Bhadiga, so my name, and then Substack, I think is just pratushbhadiga.substack.com, but you can find the Substack on my Twitter. So just go to my Twitter.
Cool. Yeah, we'll link to all that.
And you
in
can
the
also
you can also
email me pratush@susaventures.com.
Awesome. Pratush, man, thank you for doing this. Thanks for your time. And if you're listening to this, we'll link his Substack is amazing. So make sure you subscribe to that. Man, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me on.